Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This episode of Know-How is brought to you by iFixit. You can fix it, and iFixit makes it easy. With step-by-step repair guides, high-quality replacement parts, and all the tools you'll need. For $10 off your purchase of $50 or more, go to iFixit.com/twit and enter the code KNOWHOW at checkout. On this episode of Know-How, do you want to build something for your Valentine's? Well, we're going to show you how. But before that, folks, I know that the show's been a little different with just one host. It just doesn't work that way. It's supposed to be a little bit of a give and take. So we have been searching for the right co-host far and wide, everywhere, looking at geeks, tens, hundreds, thousands of possible co-hosts until we found the one, the man who makes sense. And guess what, ladies and gentlemen? He was here all the time. I introduce to you the new co-host for Know-How, Cranky Hippo, Mr. Brian Burnett.
Hello.
Oh, shh. You had me at hello. But wait. If you're here, who's TDing the show? Welcome to Know-How. It's the Twitch show where we build, bend, break, and upgrade. I'm Father Robert Ballasaire.
And I'm Brian Burnett.
And for the next 30 minutes or so, we're going to show you a couple of interesting projects that you can build for your Valentine's. That's right, it's a geek Valentine episode of Know-How. Now, Brian, this is your first episode. Welcome to the show.
Cool, thanks. I know it's a little strange being on this side of the camera.
Yeah, although I have to say, you've actually been on Know-How longer than I have, right? Because you were here from the beginning.
Yeah, I think from the people who started doing Know-How, I'm the last person. And I wasn't even on from the very beginning.
Yeah, go figure. Right. Yeah. Well, so see, folks, we try to give you the people that you know, and you definitely know Cranky Hippo.
We're just going to rotate through,
right? Yeah, so you're not going to be on every show, right?
We'll see how it goes.
Maybe, because yeah. I'd really like you to be, but you keep telling me, well, it's hard to build projects, Padre.
Well, not everyone can make it look as easy as you do. So.
Flattery will get you absolutely nowhere. But you know what will? This. So you decided that for a Valentine's gift, we should build, what is this, jewelry?
Yeah, I'd say, you know, wearable tech's pretty hot right now. Google Glass, all that sort of thing. But, this is something you could turn into a necklace for a Valentine's gift. You know, the best kind of gifts are the ones that you build yourself, too. It's a fun little project.
Now, that looks a lot like Pac-Man.
Pac-Man?
Yeah, Pac-Man. You know, gobble, gobble.
I've heard of Dot Gobbler.
Oh, Dot Gobbler. Oh, because
Pac-Man.
Pac-Man's copyright. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, you can design your own little animations for 8x8 square for it. And this took me probably about an hour to make Pac-Man. But I'm going to make it all available for people to download so they can do their own animations, too. And I'd like to encourage people to do their own animations and show it off on Google+, too.
That's good stuff. So what do you say we take a look at it?
Yeah, let's watch this pre-recorded video I did.
I first came across this project on Adafruit.com. They have a lot of cool tutorials here, and this one caught my eye as it could be maybe the ultimate geeky Valentine's gift. Now here are the parts that we need to get started. This is an 8x8 LED screen that we'll be using to show our animations. This next piece is the backplate that we'll connect to the 8x8 LED, and we'll be soldering this ourselves. And this circular little thing is called the Gemma microcontroller. This is what we'll be using to give instructions to our LED screen. And this little guy is a USB adapter for charging our battery. Here are all the parts together, along with our 500 milliamp battery. On the Adafruit website, their tutorial has the 150 milliamp battery. That was out of stock when I was about to do this project, so I went with the 500. And the only con is it is a lot bigger, but you will get a lot more battery life out of it. Alright, so the first step is going to be some soldering. What we have here is the 8x8 LED screen, and we're going to need to attach it to this backplate. Now, it does have some wires that we need to thread through the holes on the plate, and once you have them all lined up, we're going to solder them together. Now, these are pretty tiny, so take your time, be meticulous. A little tip is to heat up the pad at the bottom and then push the solder onto it. Don't try and get globs on the soldering iron and then do it. Just keep going down the line with the soldering on the back plate and just being careful the whole time you do it. And once you have them all soldered together, take a clipper and just take off the excess amount of wire. Next, we'll be soldering the 8x8 matrix to the Gemma. You'll need four separate pieces of wire, about 2 inches long. And typically when I strip the ends of the wire, I like to twist the metal so they don't fray when I'm poking them through the holes. You'll want to reference this awesome and well-made diagram by Adafruit. Now we're going to carefully solder the wires to the LED board. I made sure to have four different colored wire so I didn't lose track. The first one I'm going to do is the red wire to the plus on the LED backboard. Then I'm going to do the black for the minus, the yellow for the D, and green for the C. Now just clip off any excess wires that you have. Next, we're going to be soldering to the Gemma itself. So like before, reference the diagram so you don't make any mistakes. I will be soldering the red to the volt, the black to the ground, the yellow to the DO, and the green to the A1. Once again, soldering's all about taking your time, so don't rush this. And the large pads on the Gemma make it a lot easier for soldering than it was on the LED backpack. Alright, so now that completes step one. We've got the LED screen soldered to our Gemma microcontroller. And now we're going to get into the software. Now, if you're not a programmer, don't worry. If you know how to download and unzip a file from the internet, you'll be fine. Also, the code that we'll be using is you can completely just do copy and paste. And I'll be doing this on a Mac, but there are on the Adafruit website, there are tutorials listed for Windows and Linux. Now, we need to set up our Gemma using the Arduino IDE. Fortunately, Adafruit has made a package titled The Fast Way. Download the Arduino IDE version 1.05 with Trinket, Gemma, or Flora for your corresponding OS. Unzip the package and you'll see a little window pop up. Here is where we'll be inputting our code later. Before we start pasting code, we need to make sure the Arduino IDE has all the info it needs to set up properly. Now, go back to the Adafruit website and download the TinyWireM library. Unzip the file and rename the folder without the dash master. If you leave the dash master on there, it won't be able to read the file folder. Now find your recently installed Arduino folder. On the Mac, the default setting is in documents/Arduino. And drag the TinyWireM folder into the libraries folder. Restart Arduino IDE, and you should, under the file, sketchbook, or examples, be able to see TinyWireM library. Now there's only two more things to do before we upload our code. Under Tools, Board, make sure to select Adafruit Gemma 8 MHz, and under Tools Programmer, select USB Tiny ISP. Alright, now it's time to copy and paste some code. I have the source code available on the GitHub with the rest of my code, but you can also find it on the Adafruit website, and paste that into this window. For the extent of this tutorial, you won't need to edit any of the code in this. All of this is just instructions for the LED and the Gemma to talk to each other. Next, going back to the Arduino IDE, you're going to want to select the down arrow on the far right of the window and make a new tab. Now you're going to want to name this new tab anim.h. This is the file name and it's for our animation. This is what the source code is going to be looking for to tell the screen to display. Now it's time to copy over the animation code. I've made a Valentine-specific code myself that's available on GitHub, and there's also a .gobbler/Pac-Man code that I did myself available for download on GitHub. So pick whichever code you want, or make your own, and paste it into our anim.h file. Now, before we upload the code to our Gemma, we'll make sure that it works by checking the box in the left-hand corner, and you shouldn't get any errors if you're just copying directly from what I've shown you. Now, with your Gemma plugged in via USB to your computer, press the small button on the back. This is what initiates the bootloader. You'll be able to tell because the light on the Gemma will, instead of flash, it'll oscillate. Now, on the Arduino IDE, press the upload button. And in just a moment, you should see your animation loaded up on the LED. As far as the animations go, feel free to make adjustments or add any code to the existing stuff that I have. And if you want to show it off, you're more than welcome to post on our know-how community on G+. So a website I found that makes the animation making a lot easier is Powell's blog. We'll have a link to that in the show notes. But what this allows you to do is kind of visualize what your animation is going to look like. For every zero is an empty spot on the LED, and for every one is a color, is a light lit up LED. The format you need to follow is a B at the beginning, followed by 8 ones or zeros, and then 9 lines down, the 9th line being the amount of time that the animation is displayed. So for most of my animations, I stuck with 25, which equals to 0.25 of a second. At the top of the animation code, you can set how many times the animation loops. For my animation, I want it to stay on for a long time, so I have mine set to 255, and that equals about 20 minutes of animation time. Now for our final step, we'll be making this into a necklace. I chose to make a necklace for Valentine's Day, but if you're feeling creative, there's no reason you couldn't make this into a wristband or maybe a pin on your shirt. Now this last step is more arts and craftsy. You're going to want to use a hot glue gun for some of it. Once your hot glue gun is warmed up, we're going to need to affix the Gemma to the 8x8 LED board. Now, I looped the excess wire I had, but if you have more forethought than I did, you might be able to make your wire shorter and make it a little bit cleaner or hide them better. Carefully glue the back of the LED board to the Gemma. I filled in the edge gaps with a hot glue also, and this will protect the wires from getting pulled on. Make sure all your wires are connected correctly by plugging in your Gemma and making sure the screen still turns on. I also used some small zip ties to keep my wires in some order. Next, because the battery I chose was a little bit larger than the project they have on Adafruit, I decided to have it on the back. If you did choose to go with the 150 milliamp battery that they suggest on Adafruit, you probably could just have all three of these pieces together and be small enough, but with the 500 milliamp, I wanted it to be a little smaller where the LED screen was. I had to cut the 2-pin JST-PH connector on the end of the battery so that I could extend the length of the wire. Carefully measure out your wire because at this part, you'll be wanting to give enough room for yourself to put it over your head. Make sure to put the shrink wrap tubing over the wire before you start soldering. Otherwise, you might have to cut the wires to put the shrink wrap on afterwards. I also threaded a third blue wire to connect to the mounting holes on the LED board. I wanted to make sure not to put any excess stress on the power cable when the necklace was hanging. I put the heat shrink tubing all along the length of the wires. And then down towards the Gemma, I pulled it back, and there I was able to solder the wire to the 2-pin connector and this is what we'll use to plug into the Gemma. Now it's time to play with some fire. Carefully heat the tubing so that it will hold tight to the wires. You don't want to heat it too much or you'll melt it, but just enough heat for that it to shrink around the wires and give a good seal around the solder points, and it'll hold the wires in place. Finally, plug in the battery and you've got yourself some wearable tech. A couple of notes are this battery will not charge through the Gemma. You have to have the power cable unattached and use the USB adapter to charge it separately. Also, do not get it wet and do not feed it after midnight. If this is intended as the ultimate geeky Valentine's gift, make sure to upload the heart animation that I custom did or make one yourself.
Wow. Okay, so how much time did that actually take to build the program, to create?
You know, I'd say it'd take you an afternoon to do. It's got a little bit of everything. It's got soldering involved. Yeah. It's got programming involved. But it's not overwhelming. It's relatively simple. If you know the basics of soldering, the basics of like some a little bit of programming, most of it is just going to be copy-paste stuff and download a program. So not too difficult. Probably, you know, 6 hours or something like
six
that.
6 hours. And it can take longer if you want to increase the scope of the project. That's what I like about this. I know you showed me the compiler screen. And it's interesting because if you've been watching our other show, Coding 101, mm-hmm. you'll know what those functions do. And you can start messing with them. I know one of the things that you wanted to do was you wanted to make it loop eternally instead of 255 times.
Right. That's one of the limitations. But 255 times, depending on how long your animations are, lasts about 30 minutes before you have to reset it and hit the button. But,
that's not bad.
Yeah,
I think that's really just a memory thing with these small devices. They're not general-purpose computers. They don't have gigabytes of memory. So it's designed to do one thing and do it well for a short time.
And I'd say for any of our viewers watching, if you haven't watched Coding on 101, if you do watch those episodes, it helps out if you want to do a little bit of your own animations and stuff like that. So check it out.
Brian, great first project.
Thanks.
It really shows the spirit of the know-it-all. But you know what else does?
Tools, right?
Yeah, tools. iFixit. Now, we here on KnowHow are all about tools. Pretty much every project that we ever do requires some sort of specialized tools. You need drivers that can open up the cases that have specialty screws. You need spudgers so that you could spread cases from Apple devices. And you need all these things in one kit so that you know that that's your go-to tool bag whenever you're going to be doing some KnowHow wisdom. That's why I'm happy to welcome iFixit to the know-it-all crew. Now, iFixit is the free online repair manual for everything. Their free step-by-step repair guides are foolproof instructions to fix all of your stuff. If you've shattered your iPhone screen, if you need to repair your game console, or swap the battery on your Galaxy S3, iFixit has you covered. They have 1,000 repair guides for everything from electronics like your smartphone, tablet, and game console to your home appliance, clothing, and even your bike. They can even hook you up with the parts that you'll need to fix it, and everything they sell is tested and guaranteed. iFixit also makes the most trusted repair tools for consumer electronics, including the Pro Tech Toolkit, which Brian is playing with right now. This toolkit has 70 tools to assist you with any mod, malfunction, or misfortune that may come your way. The toolkit is the gold standard for electronics work, from garage hackers to the CIA and FBI. But more importantly, their unique tools are used by repair technicians everywhere. They include their 54-bit driver kit with 54 standard specialty and security bits, as well as Phillips bits, Pentalo bits, Torx and Torx security bits, tri-wing bits, and triangle bits. That's right, the triangle bits for the McDonald's toy. So if you've ever gotten a Happy Meal and wanted to hack together that toy into something useful, well, they've got you covered. They also include the swivel top precision driver and a flex extension for hard-to-reach screws. If you've ever had one of those gadgets that includes fasteners and in a corner, you can now use this flex adapter to get down in there without having to put the entire screwdriver into the cavity. They have ESD-safe precision tweezers for delicate manipulation and an anti-static wrist strap that keeps your devices safe from accidental static discharge. They include nylon spudgers, metal spudgers, and plastic opening tools for prying and scraping, as well as lightweight, compact, durable tool rolls that make it the on-the-go choice for repair professionals and amateurs alike. Now, the toolkit is only $64.95, and it's backed by a one-year warranty. Hobbyists and home DIY fixers also use the ProTech toolkit for doorknobs, eyeglasses, which actually is really important, cabinet doors, sink fixtures, and more. If you're looking for a great addition to a artist or hobbyist tool chest, look no further. Best of all, if you go with iFixit's kit, there are thousands of free iFixit guides to help you put your tools to use. So here's what we want you to do. Here's what we want to give to our know-it-alls. With iFixit, you can fix it yourself. So visit iFixit.com/twit for free step-by-step guides. iFixit also sells every part and tool that you'll need. Plus, if you enter the code KNOWHOW at checkout, you'll save $10 off for any purchase of $50 or more. That's iFixit.com/twit and use the code KNOWHOW. And we thank iFixit for their support of KNOWHOW. Yeah. Now we've both used this pretty extensively, right?
I think about every project I've done. Yeah. Like taking apart the NES. What was it? Mostly the spudgers to break things open.
Yeah.
So much easier.
Yeah. Now one of the things I really like about this is I used to have like four or five different toolkits that I would bring out whenever I had to do a big project. Mm-hmm. But now everything's in one case.
Yeah.
Go figure. Now, Brian, last week we did a segment on FreeNAS, specifically on why you would want to use a flash drive. And then we also did a segment on hard drive recovery, where people wondered if this really was a hard drive burrito. It really is. I mean, I've been using this technique for years and years and years, and it has shown pretty good results. Let me tell you one thing about the burrito, though, and I think not enough people understood me the 10 times I said it in the segment, and that is, if you're going to do this to a drive, this is the last thing it's going to do. If you wrap it up in this burrito and you put it in the freezer, it will keep condensation from forming before you get your data off. But just assume that the drive is dead. This is actually still working. This is working just fine. I can plug this in. But because it's gone through that treatment, I'm never going to trust with data again.
And this isn't the first time I've seen something like this. I did this with my Xbox 360 when it first died. It lived for about an hour, but as soon as the power died, it was gone.
Right? Because, you get that one good spin up and it lets you get your data off, but then just assume it's not there. I mean, the most expensive thing on your hard drive is not the hard drive.
It's the data.
It's the data, right? If you lose the data, that's trouble. So please, use the burrito once.
It does look delicious, though.
It is. Although I have heard it also referred to as a data diaper. I don't like that.
No.
This is a hard drive burrito. Yeah. Remember that. All right, now let's get to the quick tip of the day. Again, FreeNAS related. People have asked, well, Padre, why were you suggesting that we use the Western Digital Red, which is a drive that Western Digital makes specifically for NAS arrays? You can see all of them here if you take a look at my product shot. This is the Red series. This is the Green series. And then this is a Seagate Barracuda 7200 RPM 1.5 gigabyte drive. These are drives that I have pulled from NASs, from network-attached storage boxes, from RAID boxes that I have in my own network. Now, Brian, these look like every other drive that you've ever used, right?
Oh, yeah. Same form factor. I've used the greens before. I have blacks in my home computer.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, blacks are really high performance. Here's the thing. And this is the reason why we were suggesting that you use a Western Digital Red in a FreeNAS. These drives are pretty much equal in terms of how you install them, but they differ greatly in performance. The Barracuda is faster than the Green, which is faster than the Red. The power differential is also bigger. The Barracuda pulls the most power, followed by the Green, followed by the Red.
So the Red is actually less than the Green, though?
Yeah,
wasn't that what they used to market? Was that the Green was the low-cost, energy-saving one?
Absolutely. But here's the thing. When you're dealing with NASs, it's really all about the heat. We've got a little video that Patrick's going to roll right now that's going to show you what happened when I started looking at the temperature differentials of these different drives. I took a standard Fluke probe, and I took a look at how much heat these were generating. Now, this is after 1 hour in the open air. The Barracuda was dissipating 90 degrees of heat, whereas the Green was hovering around 85, and the Red went all the way down to 75 degrees. Now, I know that doesn't sound like a lot, Brian, but remember, when you're dealing with hard drives, oh, by the way, there's the evil genius that is cranky.
Right. I'm glad you left that in there.
It had to be in there. It's part of the segment. But when we're dealing with these drives, the problem is NASs are stacked up like this.
Right. So there's not a lot of airflow going through there.
Exactly. Right? I mean, look at this. If you look at the product shot, this is not a NAS box, but this is how you can expect your NAS drives to be stacked up. So if I'm using these Barracuda drives, if I'm using these Seagates, I'm not running at 90 degrees. I'm running it at like 150 degrees, especially if there's no airflow.
And over time, I imagine that's going to wear on the hard drive.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's why we recommend the Reds, because running at a lower temperature, drawing less power, means that they're going to generate less of that heat bubble.
Right.
Less of a heat bubble means longer longevity.
Cool. And that's what you want from your drives.
That's what you want from your drives. And now the other thing that people said was, well, Padre, the performance on a Western Digital Red is not nearly as good as, say, on a Western Digital Black. I mean, you've got a Black, right?
Right. But I use that for my home desktop. That's what I run games off of, my Windows 7 OS and everything like that.
Exactly. And in that instance, you do want the best performance possible. A NAS is slightly different. If you're running like six drives, that's what this is in. This is in a six-drive array. the aggregate speed will actually max out the connection, the Ethernet connection. Mm. So even though that they're much slower than these Barracudas or your Western Digital Black, right, it's not going to slow down the overall performance of the system.
Nice. And I imagine it's not something that you would be accessing all the time, streaming data back and forth. Or would you be doing video on them and stuff?
It really depends. I typically don't do video over the network.
Yeah.
I do on some like projects where I just need a little bit of B-roll. But if I'm going to be doing anything for a serious project, I'll copy it over to my local drive and get that
kind
of speed.
Yeah. You just want something to be backed up for you.
Exactly. Now, something else that we need to look at, and people have asked in the question section of our community, is all about SSDs. They wanted to know, well, Padre, what about SSDs? Could we install SSDs into our FreeDAS and get crazy performance?
Yeah.
Yeah, and
they're low heat?
They're very low heat, very low power. Yeah. Problem is, no.
They're expensive.
They're expensive, so you're not going to get as much capacity. But the big thing has to be the fact that, again, you're going to be maxed out by the interface of the NAS, right?
Right.
You've only got a gigabit connection, maybe a 2 gigabit connection if you bond it, maybe a 10 gig connection if you've got really, really fast network speeds, which
right,
you probably don't. So the speed of an array of SSD drives in a NAS,
yeah,
no good.
Not worth it.
Where it does make a difference is
I'd use it in my desktop.
Yes,
yeah, that's where I'd want them.
We've seen this from Kingston before. If you go to my product shot, we've got images that we'll put into the finished show of Kingston running these in a RAID array inside of a local box. So they had 24 of these in a performance array, a striped array, in a box that was designed for speed. And I got to tell you, in that instance, because it has local access to the motherboard, it's crazy fast.
I'd like to play with that.
Yeah, I would too. Hey, Kingston, you want to send us about 24 high-speed SSDs?
Mm-hmm.
Let's make that happen.
We'll find a use for them. We'll do something with them.
Brian, you made us a nice little Valentine's gift in the shape of a gobble man. What was that called? Gobbler?
Mr. Big Gobbler.
Big Gobbler. Yeah, Gobbler pendant. But I wanted to do something a little different. Maybe for the ladies in the audience who want to build something for their geek boyfriend or husband. Now, you know what this is, right?
Antenna?
Yeah, it's a Wi-Fi antenna. The nice thing about an antenna like this is it's designed to give you increased sensitivity in one direction and increase RF isolation in one direction. In other words, rather than being like this, this antenna will spread Wi-Fi energy in 360 degrees.
It's directional.
It's directional, right? Which gives us better sensitivity, better RF directionality, which means better performance and, most importantly, better distance.
Cool.
Have you ever had a problem with Wi-Fi?
Constantly.
Well,
especially on opposite ends of my apartment, because where the cable comes into the house is in the front, and whenever I'm in the bedroom, can't use the Wi-Fi hardly at all.
And let me guess, you've probably got your Wi-Fi access point against a wall, right?
Yep.
And do you have anything on the other side of that wall?
A couch.
Well, wouldn't it be nice if you could take all the energy that was being wasted on that dead wall and instead direct it in the area that you actually live?
Are you going to show me how?
Well, I'm not going to show you how, but you know who is?
Who?
Your brother.
I have a brother?
When you're building a cantenna, there are a few parts that you're going to need. The first piece is this, a female N-type connector. It's what's going to allow you to put the antenna rod inside the can. The second piece is this, some heavy gauge copper wire. This actually should do just fine. You're also going to need a pigtail to connect the N-type connector to an adapter and an adapter that supports an external antenna. The last piece is the can. Now, ideally, you want something that's 3.5 inches wide and as close to 5 inches long as possible. Unfortunately, those dimensions are really hard to find in the real world, so I've gone with this clear broth soup can. What I like about it is that it's plenty long, and because it's clear broth, it's easier to clean. You're going to have to open it up and clean it out, but of course, we here at Twit TV hate to waste things. So I've tasked Greg here with helping us to consume all the broth.
Hey, Padre, you want to tie me?
We tried that, Greg. Remember, you kept trying to run away. You can't be trusted.
Once you've emptied and washed the can, measure the diameter of the container, then plug that number into the Cantana calculator linked in our show notes. The calculator gives us two important pieces of information: how far from the back of the Cantana we need to drill our antenna port, and how long our Cantana should be.
Anything over 4 inches wide is really too big, but it makes it easier for us to show you the steps. Mark off the antenna port location on the can. You should also mark off the approximate size of the N-type flange. You want the flange to fit easily through the hole, but you also want the hole small enough to be able to support the connector.
To do this project, you're going to need a few tools. Most notably, you're going to need a power drill and some drill bits of varying sizes. You're also going to need some steel files so you can remove the rough edges and the sharp corners, as well as a soldering iron and some solder. Of course, we're working with power tools, so we need to have safety goggles. I've asked Greg to help us with this little drilling project. Now, Greg, we're all about safety, so remember, safety first.
Can we use like a clamp or something?
You know what, Greg? We probably could.
Drill a pilot hole at the mark that you previously measured, starting with a pilot bit and gradually moving up to a larger bit. You want to make the hole large enough to just barely fit the mounting flange of the N-type connector. Once the hole is large enough, file off the burrs and the sharp edges. Clamp the N-type connector, then solder approximately 2 inches of copper conductor into the receptacle. You may need to sand the edges of the conductor to guarantee a clean solder joint. Measure off 1.21 inches on the copper conductor, then snip the conductor to the proper length. You can now choose to hot glue the N-type connector into the cantenna or use 4 self-tapering screws to secure the connector. Give the can a rough sanding if you plan to paint it.
Technically, you're done. Your can will work, but I would suggest that you give it one light coat of paint to protect it from the elements. Greg, could you make sure that this gets painted?
Yeah, so I was thinking, shouldn't I, like, wear a respirator or do this in a well-ventilated area, like, outside, maybe?
You know what, Greg? Yes, you should. Yes, you should. With this kind of antenna design, you can expect between a 6 and 12 decibel increase of RF sensitivity. Not only that, but you'll get an increase in the amount of RF directionality, which means that if you were to say, climb to the top of a tall, tall antenna or a tall building, you could shoot a Wi-Fi link for miles. Won't that be fun, Greg?
Please no.
That's right. Freaking science.
What I like about this design is how cheap it is. I mean, yeah. Something like this isn't that expensive. You could buy a good directional antenna for, $20, $30, but I can make this entire project, including buying this connector and the spool of copper wire, for something like $5.
Nice. Yeah. Most of this stuff, it seems like you'd be able to find at home.
Exactly. Yeah. If you've got copper wire, if you've got cans, then you really don't have to buy anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. It will really, really do in a pinch. Now, one thing I do have to say is you mentioned during the break.
This is like some kind of hard plastic, and I imagine it's waterproof.
It's waterproof, right?
Kind of
so you can
weatherproof.
Mount that outside.
Yeah.
You can actually do that to this, but what you have to do is you have to give it a coat of paint on the outside to keep it from rusting.
Right.
And then you have to wrap the connector inside with electrical tape.
Because it's copper. So
it's copper, right. And the RF signal, the 2.4 gigahertz signal, is transparent.
And it goes through electrical tape, no problem?
Yeah. And it will keep it nice and fresh, and it won't rust out in just a couple of days.
Yeah, leave it outside, forget about it.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Now, this is something that you should try with smaller cans. As I mentioned in the video, this is actually too big. You know, this is 4.5 inches, and it's on the outer range of what is acceptable for a waveguide for a 2.4 gigahertz signal. Mm-hmm. If you can, they have the old-style Stag chili cans, which are about the same height, but they're 3.5 inches wide. Those are incredibly rare. So if you happen to find those, you know, buy a lot of them, even if you don't need
for your antenna project.
For your antenna project. Yeah. Now, one thing we will do in a future project is, you can see I've got this attached to a pigtail, right? This allows me to hook up the cantenna to an adapter. This is just a standard Wi-Fi USB adapter, so I can plug this into my computer.
Very cool.
Yeah, we're going to shoot a link a couple of miles using nothing but cantennas.
A couple of miles? Wow.
Won't that be nice?
Do you think I could shoot it from my home to here? To the studio?
Actually, that's not a bad idea. I think we just... Hey, Greg. Yeah, we need you to climb on top of the roof.
He's used to that stuff.
Yeah, totally,
he does
it all the
time.
He does it all the time. Yeah. Oh, and by the way, folks, if you want to make one of these projects at home, I would suggest you take all of the necessary safety precautions, including not doing it without Greg. Just email us, and we'll send him to your home.
Mm-hmm. We'll probably get, like, an aerial drone, drop him off or something.
Yeah.
He's used to heights at this point.
It ain't no thing.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. So, folks, what I'd like now is to say thank you very much to Brian Burnett for stepping in as co-host. I know this is kind of daunting. How do you feel?
I had fun. Yeah, and I learned a lot, too. Usually when I'm pushing the buttons on the camera, I just kind of tone you out. Don't really listen that well. So.
Well, because normally when you're on the TriCaster, it takes a lot of time to get it done right.
Right. Yeah. Patrick. No, I have to give Patrick a hand. It's not easy doing that.
It's not easy to jump in, yeah.
He's doing a good job.
But I think that concludes our Valentine lesson for the know-it-alls. Yeah. You know, if you want to find out anything about the projects that we've done, if you want to find the steps for your Adafruit necklace, want to find the steps for MyCantenna, just go ahead and jump over to our show notes page. Where's that, Greg? Twit.tv.
Greg?
Sorry.
Thanks,
Brian.
Padre.
Oh, great. Now I got
it's easy to get those brunettes mixed up. But you can find show notes at twit.tv/KH. And you do great show notes. I'm going to try and keep up the good work by, giving the folks some details.
I'll toot our own horn. I said the best show notes in the DIY industry. We really give you the step-by-step. If you want to know how to do this project, just follow those steps. Right. You'll be able to make your own Cantenna.
And even if our show notes aren't that great, we have an awesome G+ community.
Yeah, that's right.
Everyone out there who's involved in that, props to you, because most of the time when I go through there and someone has a question, somebody already jumps in and answers it for
me.
So
that's what's nice about that community. It's so active. You know, it's not just us in there answering questions.
Some cool ideas, too.
We get the other know-it-alls into it to answer your own questions. It's a nice community. Almost 6,000 people. Go ahead and check it out. You will be able to get there at gplus.to/twitkh. Right now, I think there's something wrong with the link shortener, but if you can't get into it, just search for know-how, and we're the only community there.
Right. Yeah.
Finally, we've got Twitter addresses that you could reach us at. If you want to talk to me, you can find me at PadreSJ. What about you, Brian?
I would be cranky_hippo on Twitter. So,
yeah. I think that about does it. So now that you know,
go do it. Oh, Audrey! Oh!
Deep inside.